You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, April 4th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District in New York City. Today on the program, we'll be welcoming David Dayan from Fire Dog Lake News, Sarah Benacasa, who will be doing an event tonight in support of Planned Parenthood. Barack Obama has announced that he's going to be running for president in 2012. We will have an update on that and more. But first, breaking format just slightly, but it's worth it, folks. David Dayan from FireDogLake.com is the news editor over there to give us an update on this mortgage deal that is will give us a status exactly where it is. This is, of course, a group of attorney generals from across the United States attempting to work out this mortgage mess. This coming in the wake of a report by 60 Minutes of something you hopefully know by now, this whole phenomenon of fraudulent robo-signers. Welcome to the program, David.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
First, give us an update. What is the deal that is being proposed by the state's attorney generals, and who is supporting it in the administration and out of the administration?
Yeah, well, there aren't a ton of details out there, but what we do know is that the state 50 state attorneys general put together a term sheet, 27 pages, that outline the framework of what they would want in exchange for basically agreeing not to prosecute on fraud and some of the other things that had been done in state courts. The banks gave a counteroffer, which included a couple of the same things in that deal, and then got rid of all the penalties. They had a meeting on Wednesday, and not too many details about that. It was sort of a feeling out session. This meeting was between the contact group that's running the AG investigation and the banks, representatives from the banks. Some Republican AGs who didn't agree to this investigation in the first place. It was done before the elections. So there's some new Republican AGs who are resistant to essentially doing anything on this. And there are some Democratic AGs who are concerned about how it's kind of a rush job. There hasn't really been a thorough investigation into the extent of the abuse by servicers, the extent of the robo-signing, the extent of the forgeries and all the fraud that has been accomplished in state courts. So there's resistance on both sides, and there's a sense that this AG investigation and this proposed settlement is kind of breaking down. There was sort of a small window for it. What is happening is that the some federal bank regulators who were sort of involved in a tangential way in this AG settlement, a couple of them, the more bank-friendly ones, have kind of gone rogue. And there could be an enforcement action coming down as early as this week from particularly the Office of Comptroller of the Currency, which I like to call the Office of Bank Advocacy, this group that is headed by used to be headed by an actual bank lobbyist. Now it's just the chief of staff to the bank lobbyist, who's the acting director of the OCC. And this would be a really kind of a fake enforcement. That the differences between what the OCC is proposing and what the banks proposed on themselves are very minuscule. There aren't too many differences in it. So this is an opportunity for the OCC to sort of pretend to be enforcing the law in this case, and the banks can say, see, we're complying with our obligations from federal regulators, our regulator, and they hope the whole thing can go away at that point.
Is an attempt by the Office of the Comptroller to essentially,
it's
a whitewash attempt to short circuit any type of enforcement action by these states,
the
attorney generals. Now, is this binding on all states attorney generals, or just the ones that sign off on it?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that's interesting. In order to get an action, a global settlement, as it were, you would need a large majority of state AGs to sign on, between 38 and 41 is what I was told, similar to the tobacco settlement where they got 46 AGs to sign on and then the other four came on a little bit later. And even then, it sort of becomes the official stated policy of the National Association of Attorneys General, but then it can't supersede state law. So there are a lot of things to work out. You know, it's a settlement, so presumably the banks would have to sign on as well. So there's not a ton of hope that we're going to reach a resolution for that. And to be honest, considering that there's been not really a thorough investigation going into this, considering that the baseline number that it looks like they're looking at in terms of a penalty would be $20 billion, maybe $25 billion in principal reductions, loan modifications that the banks would be forced to put forward. To a lot of experts, that seems kind of small and not sufficient to the level of the problem when you're talking about millions and millions of forgeries in state courts, and you're talking about, you know, maybe $1 trillion of mortgages that have been backed or are trying to be proven that they're in the possession of these banks through basically forgeries. If you saw the 60 Minutes piece last night, you would know a little bit more about that. From one side, from the side of the community that's been focusing on this, a lot of experts are saying, well, I'm not sure if we even want this attorney general settlement. Maybe the AG should go their own way, pursue their own enforcement through their own state consumer protection laws, undergo investigations, get discovery, and find out the real extent of the abuse, and then at that point the banks will come running for their own settlement, and it'll end up being more than what they're proposing right now.
What attorney generals across the country do you think would be the ones that you would look to perform the most vigorous investigation of something like this?
Right. Well, certainly in New York, where Eric Schneiderman is the new AG, and he's already publicly balked at giving up any kind of, pursuing any claims mm-hmm. under a settlement. He's because New York is the state where most of this securitization law is kind of grounded in, New York State trust law, he has a lot of power to, undergo investigations and enforcement. Already in Nevada and Arizona, two of the sand states, two of the states that have been hardest hit by the foreclosure crisis, there is an active lawsuit going on between the two AGs and Bank of America, because previously there was a settlement done where Bank of America agreed to do some loan modifications, and they flat out did not meet their obligations. This is another serious concern from people. Yeah, right. And so you're going to undergo a settlement that essentially puts similar restrictions on the banks or mandates on the banks. And what if they don't do it? I mean, so that's just another aspect of why people are a little concerned
now,
about this idea.
Now, all this is focused on essentially the fraudulent chain of title that you
right.
have the servicer makes a loan and then essentially sold it off multiple times, and you're supposed to actually record the transfer of these sales. The banks never did it because these things were getting bundled so much. And it's unclear the banks that are trying to foreclose upon certain properties even own the note, essentially, or don't have the chain of title to this loan. Now, last night on 60 Minutes, the chair of the FDIC floated an idea. Tell us what that idea was and where it fits in relative to, let's say, what the comptroller is offering.
Yeah, she floated an idea that, you can take it for what it's worth, but it was almost a super fund, cleanup fund, that banks would give so that homeowners would not pursue individual claims. With respect to the AG settlement, that cannot supersede individual homeowner claims when they're trying to save their home.
Mm-hmm.
So this would operate separate and apart from that settlement. It would be an offer, I assume. I don't know how it could be binding. It would be an offer that banks would create this fund, offer it to individuals who believe that they are being foreclosed on illegally, and in acceptance for this money, it would almost be a cash payout so they could get the home back and then reestablish title. It depends on the amount of money. It depends on, I'm not terribly keen on it because it seems like it's taking away people's due process rights. But it's just another example. You know, this title thing is the great unmentionable that banks don't want to talk about. They don't want anyone to know about. But thankfully, 60 Minutes gave it some publicity yesterday. I mean, the truth is, as you said, when they did these securitizations years and years and years ago, they simply did not properly convey the title, convey the mortgage to the trust in the way that they were not just supposed to, but by law, by the pooling and servicing agreements of the securitization, were mandated and required to. And that is not something you can really go back unless you are re-spinning the earth and changing time. It's not something you can go back and fix retroactively. It really isn't. So that is the fundamental problem that they're experiencing. And if state courts start ruling that you actually don't have ownership of this loan because you didn't properly do the steps required back when you securitized it, that is a huge mess. And we're talking about millions and millions and millions of homes.
And I know you got to go, but we've already seen a little bit of this, right? I mean, the Ibanez in Massachusetts, I mean, we're starting to see cases, sporadic cases around, and I guess this is sort of like for the banks, this is a ticking time bomb, particularly when you see something like this on 60 Minutes, more and more lenders are going to see this, and they're going to eventually some attorneys, private attorneys, I would imagine, in these states are going to catch on, and they're going to realize there's something to be fought here.
Absolutely. And the bigger problem is the investors, the people who bought the securities, who are now finding that their mortgage-backed securities were actually non-mortgage-backed securities, that they weren't backed by anything. Once you get enough of those investors congregated together, what they can do is an action to force the banks to repurchase these fraudulent securities. And now we're talking billions, hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars, and you have people who are investors, institutional investors, who actually have the money to carry out those cases. You know, individual homeowners don't necessarily, if they had the money to fight these foreclosure actions, they'd probably pay their mortgage.
Right.
Investors have the time, money, know-how, and access to the courts to actually undergo these enforcement actions, and that is a serious problem for the Mets.
So lastly, as we're talking about TARP and people are evaluating TARP these days, basically what we saw in that instance is the government had an option. They could have gone directly to these homeowners and have resolved the issue at that point. But instead, what they did is essentially give the money to the banks, and the banks really never used that money to deal with this mess, did they?
No, I mean, they were pretty skillful in, you know, using the money to sort of delay the inevitable, the losses that came out of the popping of the housing bubble. They just tried to put it off, make their money through various other ways, and hope that this didn't come back to bite them. But it's really, it wasn't about the money, because there wasn't enough money that
would
there
isn't
no
issue.
Way that there would resolve the issue that the government would be willing to give to the banks. It's just not an option. So, you know, it's a serious problem. It's good that it's getting on more people's radar screen. But, you know, I think enforcement and the ability to get some justice here is ultimately going to come from courts, from investors, individual homeowners. I'm not convinced that politicians are going to seek get the justice that we seek in this case.
All right, David Dayan from FireDogLake.com, the news section over there. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate giving us time today.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye, Dave. So there you have it, folks. I think we're probably just months away from round two, where these now bigger than too big to fail banks are going to have to deal with this mess. Because as the word gets out there that, I mean, this 60 Minutes report was just amazing. You can find it online. Maybe we'll post it on our Tumblr account. Yeah, New Jersey, we're going to talk about that at the post show. And it's an unbelievable report. You got these guys brought in at $10 an hour forging the name of fake bank executives. Stunning stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with some news and then Sarah Benicasa. You don't want me, set me free. Exactly who I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Today is April 4th, ladies and gentlemen, which means that tomorrow is April 5th. I figured that out all by my lonesome. And big election in Wisconsin. This is going to be essentially the first test of the labor movement that has grown there and their capacity to sort of change the politics on the ground. Just to give you an update, on Friday, the circuit judge or the county judge, Marianne Sumi, delayed for up to, I guess, even beyond 2 months, the implementation of that anti-union law that Scott Walker signed into effect nearly a month ago now. And this was based on a question as to whether or not this bill was properly, I guess, offered in conference in according to state law, in terms of the state open meeting requirement. There's also lawsuits filed by the unions there as to whether or not the bill itself that passed had fiscal elements, which had to do with the requirement for quorum. You'll remember those 14 Democratic senators were out of town, so they wouldn't have to provide quorum. You don't need two-thirds quorum for a non-fiscal bill. That's being challenged as to whether or not that bill, in fact, was non-fiscal. There's a third lawsuit that is arguing that the legislation itself is unconstitutional because it infringes upon employees' equal protection rights and their rights to freedom of speech and association. We have this election tomorrow for the state Supreme Court, which could swing the court 4-3 in favor of the Democrats. It's going to be a tight race. This guy has been a longtime incumbent, and nobody's quite sure. It's going to come down probably to turnout. So keep your eyes on that. Just a funny note from a Talking Points memo. I don't know, funny. But the Wisconsin state government, they really were undergoing a constitutional crisis at this time as they were attempting, as the Republicans. Remember, the House and the state Senate in Wisconsin run by a pair of brothers. The Fitzgerald brothers, both Republicans, and I think even like their brother-in-law is in control of the state troopers. And apparently it is coming out now that all of the cops, including the state troopers, refused the orders of the private attorney of the state Senate, Fitzgerald, to arrest these Democratic state senators. And when Fitzgerald tried to have the order to detain put out on a statewide system that officers use to check for warrants, the State Department of Justice sent him a letter and said, "We would strongly recommend that you attempt to get the Senate's order to detain out of the system. To the extent possible, indicate publicly that it's been withdrawn so law enforcement officers do not rely upon it and attempt to enforce it, thereby creating unnecessary liability exposure to them in the state." Because you can't arrest, apparently, state senators while the Senate is in session. So there was a real constitutional crisis going on at that time, just behind the scenes. And meanwhile, the implications of what's going on in Wisconsin, what's going on in Ohio, what's going on in Indiana, what's going on in Florida and New Jersey has had a dramatic effect on cops and firefighters and their political allegiance. The Political reports that Chuck Canterbury, the national president of the Fraternal Order of Police, said his members are shocked by the turn of events. Don Lights on Marblehead, as we would say. He says, "Who are these evil teachers who teach your children, these evil policemen who protect them, these evil firemen who pull you from burning buildings? When did we all become evil?" said Canterbury, whose union endorsed Bush in 2000, Bush in 2004, and John McCain in 2008. Man, there's going to be a backlash, he said. "Already, rank-and-file police officers and firefighters who long viewed themselves as separate from the rest of the movement are carrying picket signs, signing petitions, and standing side-by-side with their labor brethren." I saw this out in Madison. And there was a certain measure of surprise because, remember, cops and firefighters were left out of this anti-union bill out there, but they still showed up en masse to protest this. And it's, I don't know that we're seeing a radicalization, but we're seeing at least a return home of union voters. Mark Sanders, president of the Ohio Association of Professional Firefighters, said he's had Republican members apologize for backing Kasich. "They are never voting that way again," said Sanders, a Cincinnati Fire Department lieutenant. Peter King, Republican from New York, former supporter of terrorism in Ireland, experienced the blowback firsthand when he attended a recent event for rising leaders in the New York Fire Department. "These are down-the-line conservatives. They fully supported Bush in the Iraq War, the war against terrorism, and all the gut issues they were there." King said, "Some of the guys I talked to said we stood with Bush on Queens Boulevard. Now the Republicans have turned on us." With all due respect, guys, wake up and smell the coffee. You know, it's like that old adage, right? First they came for welfare queens. Then they came for Social Security. And by the time they came for us, there was nobody left. According to a November Heart Research poll, 55% of all union members said they were Democrats. This is back in November. 25% were Republicans. Among building trade unions, 47% were self-described Democrats. 25% said they were Republicans. In January, this has changed. Democrats jumped to 63%, while the self-described Republicans fell to 18%. Slightly embarrassed, at the very least, to tell pollsters that they still support Republicans, at the very least. And that was before Wisconsin and Ohio collective bargaining fights went from rumors to the nation's front pages. So the writing has been on the wall, and good news, at least in those states. Meanwhile, as we've seen unemployment drop, not significantly, but it's trending in the right direction, a report commissioned by the Wider Opportunities for Women, a nonprofit group, shows that many of the jobs being added in retail, hospitality, home health care, to name a few categories, are unlikely to pay enough for workers to cover the cost of fundamentals like housing, utilities, food, health care, transportation, in the case of working parents, child care. According to the report, a single worker needs an income of $30,000 a year. Now, of course, it depends on where you live, but nationally speaking, or just above $14 an hour to cover the basic expenses and save for retirement and emergencies. That is close to three times the 2010 national poverty level of $10,830 for a single person, and nearly twice the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. The minimum age, if you account for inflation, is basically off of $4 or where it should be, compared to 30 or 40 years ago. A single worker with two young children needs an annual income of almost $58,000, or just over $27 an hour, to attain economic stability. A family with two working parents and two young children needs to earn $67,000 a year. That, of course, compares with the national poverty level of $22,000 for a family of four. And this is one of the things I think, you know, those people in Wisconsin also knew. It wasn't just a matter of this collective bargaining bill. It was also the draconian cuts being imposed by Scott Walker's budget. And, you know, as we head into this era of austerity, you've got Paul Ryan announcing the proposed 2012 budget for Republicans, which aims to cut $1 trillion from Medicaid. Essentially, all those poor people, all those elderly people, all those disabled people who get health care via Medicaid, going to flip it to a voucher system and leave these millions of people essentially without health care coverage. And really, what we're talking about in Washington right now is just a question of how many cuts are we going to do, not a question of whether or not cuts are going to destroy the economy or going to essentially leave more and more people without health care, without an ability to eat, without an ability to provide heating oil, heat in the winter. And this coming out of Britain, you know, it's funny because I went on Radigan. I'm going to be on Radigan again today, I should say. But this was months ago. And Radigan said, we're going to see this austerity in Britain. This must have been in, gosh, December. We're going to see this austerity in Britain. Is this going to be a template for this country? Are people going to watch what happens over there? And is it going to provide us some policy direction? And my answer at the time was, no, because the austerity is going to prove to destroy their economy, and nobody's going to talk about it over here. Well, apparently results are coming back from the austerity as it's being implemented. Researchers from JFK NOP, I don't know, I guess that's a British economic a standard. Vicky Redwood, an economist at the Capital Economics. The GFK NOP measure of confidence has still not reversed much of the sharp drop seen at the start of the year. In other words, austerity has sunk consumer confidence because they're starting to feel the pain. And other measures paint an even more downbeat picture, with the nationwide measure now below levels reached during the recession. The big picture is that confidence is now at levels consistent with the past, with sustained falls in consumer spending. Accordingly, we doubt the recent negative news on spending will improve anytime soon. In other words, they're crashing their own economy because of their austerity measures. Meanwhile, there's a new movement of 4,000 progressive leaders across the country that are going to begin to fast to protest congressional budget cuts. You can check this out. Prominent participants include the progressive evangelical leader Jim Wallace and David Beckman, president of Bread for the World. We'll put a link up to that on our on Majority FM. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Sarah Benacasa, who is doing a she's a funny comedian, who is doing a an event for tonight for Planned Parenthood tonight in New York City. We'll be right back after this brief musical interlude. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Sarah Benacasa. You can check her out at sarahbenacasa.com. She is a comedian. You do a lot of stuff, Sarah, don't you?
I try to, Sam. I definitely try to. Thank you so much for having me on the show, by the way.
My pleasure. You blog for Wonkette. You blog for Comedy Central, right?
Yeah, I blog for Comedy Central's political satire site, indecisionforever.com, and I blog for Wonkette and write filthy things for them, and I'm just finishing up a book right now. So a lot of writing, and then I travel and do the comedy. So tonight I'm hosting Planned Parenthood NYC's benefit show at the Bowery Ballroom.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning, isn't it, how in 2011 – in some way, it's shocking that we need to raise money to fight the onslaught of this attack on this basic right for women.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a fundament. I think what it essentially boils down to is that there's a fundamental disagreement among people who are pro-choice and I think what I'm supposed to call anti-choice, but which I will call pro-life, just because that's what they call themselves. And it is, there's this disagreement over the idea of when human life begins. And to me, that's something that's not going to be solved. You know, we see it as an inalienable human right, to be able to terminate a pregnancy, and they see it as murder. And so, you know, depending on who's got more power in the country at the time, I suppose the power balance tips. And we have to have rock and roll shows for right. to preserve the right that we care about.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, the bottom line is that it's a right granted by, or at the least, I should say, edified by the Supreme Court. And at the end of the day, I mean, this is as much about misogyny in my mind as anything else, because we have, you know, the next step, if the Republicans didn't use this as an electoral wedge, and you know, I don't think they'll ever sort of come out and attack it fully frontally as a right, because they'll lose a lot of what drives, I think, a lot of their voters to the polls. But the next step is also contraception.
Absolutely, yeah, and the thing is that, you know, Planned Parenthood doesn't receive federal funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood receives funding for all sorts of different things, from prevention to providing the provision of low-cost and no-cost birth control options, to things that have really nothing to do with the production of babies per se, such as cervical cancer screenings and breast cancer screenings and mammograms and things like that. There are a lot of women whose only healthcare provider is Planned Parenthood.
But don't you think God should really just sort that stuff out?
Well, here's the thing. I recreationally murder babies. So
right.
God and I haven't been talking lately because we had a breakup a few years back. But, you know, I think that he, with a capital he, should definitely be in charge of everything. I think you're right, Sam. I think so. I'm glad that we're both on the same page, and that we're actually both secretly conservative fundamentalist Christians.
Take his scepter and every time Planned Parenthood tries to force feed kids contraceptive pills and forcibly put condoms on them, shouldn't he take a scepter and just strike them down?
Yeah, he should. He should shove it in their butts first to prevent the sodomy, and then he should strike them down. I absolutely agree with you, sir. I think you've hit on something amazing.
Well, there you go. We could have resolved this whole mess very quickly. Now, did you also have a show? Like, you still doing the tub show?
I do. I would love to have you in the tub sometime.
I don't bathe.
It's well, that's fine. That's a religious choice, and I understand. It's called Getting Wet, and it's really fun. And I also do a show, I do a show called Democracy Wow, which is in which I play myself as a, really superficial kind of Access Hollywood type reporter, where I talk, like, I'm going to interview, Mr. Katz. I will refer to him as Mr. Katz, who, the, publisher, Mr. Katz. The publisher of Mother Jones, and I am going to be interviewing a variety of other people at the upcoming National Conference on Media Reform in Boston. So I'm going to be doing a bunch of interviews there, and musician Aaron McEwen and different people like that.
That's funny. You know, when Air America first launched, we were at this we had this huge party because we were funded by a con man. So I don't know if anybody ever got paid for that, but it was at a huge. Huge party in back in 2004, and somebody came up to me, and I can't remember what magazine it was from, but it was from, like, I don't know, it wasn't People or something like that, and they said, do you mind if we ask you some questions? And I was like, oh, awesome. This is my first sort of real official pundit thing. And the question was, John Kerry's pink ties, what do you think?
And were you like, I think they're fucking great is what I fucking think.
It was stunning. I had no response for this person. I had absolutely no idea what to say at this point.
I did a radio show on Sirius XM for 2 years for Cosmopolitan magazine. And thank God it was about sex and not about, like, beauty and makeup and shit like that. But my God, just the inanity of some of the topics in the magazine. And they do it very well. They're very good at it. But, like, just the, you know, there's only so many times you can explain 40 ways to put on your lip gloss and 50 ways to blow your boyfriend and then make yourself puke so he won't leave you. Like, really, I just couldn't. Ugh, it was tough. But they paid me, and I respect that very much.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's what our capitalist society is all about. So the details tonight, it is down at the
Bowery Ballroom.
Bowery Ballroom in New York City.
Doors are at 7, and the headliners are Tao with the Get Down, Stay Down, and some friends of mine who are awesome are the Pearl and the Beard, mm-hmm. and the band The Blood Sugars, and a woman named Anna. I think her last name is Edgy. I don't know. I just bought her music on iTunes to support, and I can't pronounce her last name, but I'm sure I'll learn. And I'm hosting, and it's going to be really awesome and really fun. There's raffles, and you can win prizes to go behind the scenes at the Colbert Report and do all kinds of fun stuff. So it's awesome, and all the proceeds go to Planned Parenthood. And you can find out more at ppnyc.org, Sam.
Sarah Benacasa at sarahbenacasa.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Good luck tonight. Have fun.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, we earned our explicit rating on iTunes today. We got that down. Yeah, you got to speak in the mic. We're going to have to.
Yeah, I got to start speaking in the mic.
In the post show, we will introduce the new Dorsey. I may never call him New Dorsey again. We may start actually calling him by his name in our post show today. I will take your IMs at a majority FM. As always, not sure who we have later in the week of the show. It's Monday. We're still trying to work it out. And see you tomorrow.